I released products. They sold out in 7 minutes. We sold 200,000 rand worth of stock in 7 minutes.
Like the Kylie Jenner. You're like the Kylie Jenner of hair products, right? I mean, hello.
But it came to her naturally. Her voice. Then I started posting every single day, sometimes twice a day from end of 2018. So I used personal money. All the money I earned from influencing, I used to fund the business. The contract came into play beginning of 2019 and I left my 9-to-5.
To recognize when you start a business, you realize you have to do everything.
Everything.
And you also have to be out there and be seen and build the personal brand.
So funny enough, entrepreneurs don't realize that when they leave their 9-to-5s or they leave their structured lives, or even if they don't come from a 9-to-5, let me actually just speak about what I know.
What advancement would you like to see in the future in order for Africa to be catalysts?
So she says, you know, in 10 years this is going to happen. These are the scenarios I've had. Protect yourself here, 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 here.
Very good advice is always to have a lawyer.
Yes,
a very good lawyer.
Yes, my lawyer's amazing.
You have to have a brilliant lawyer and a brilliant accountant. When you have those two right, you know, you can sleep at night a little bit better.
Yeah.
People always look at your success, but they don't realize the hard work that you had to do before that.
I am middle-aged.
Middle-aged. How old are
business
you?
Business has aged me.
Uh-huh,
I'm 34.
Listen, don't put people
off. But I'm 45. No, look, I don't want to put people off, but business is the hardest thing that you'll ever do.
I mean, like, hello. She calls herself, what did you say? You're brilliant!
Thank you.
Welcome to Bolt Not Born, the real stories behind African entrepreneurs. This series is brought to you by Clicks to empower you on your journey to building a business. We know the entrepreneurial path is not a straight line. It's long days, tough calls, sleepless nights, and for many of you, it's been a battle on the front lines. But we're here to remind you, keep building, your story matters. Joining me in studio today is a young woman who didn't start with a business plan. She started with a decision. Sino Vuyo Mondliwa chose to stop relaxing her hair and embraced it in its natural state. That decision opened up a new journey, one filled with questions, learning, and a deep commitment to unlearning years of conditioning about beauty and identity. At a point in her life where she was rethinking her career and purpose, she turned to what came naturally, her voice. She picked up a camera and began documenting her journey, sharing openly as she figured things out in real time. No script, no perfect plan, just honestly, curiosity and the courage to keep showing up. From that commitment, Love Kinks was born. Founded in 2016, Love Kinks exists to serve the healthy hair journey of black women, especially those with type 4 hair, a category long ignored in the beauty industry. Love Kinks is built on the simple truth. Natural hair is not a challenge to solve. It is a crown to honor. And healthy hair is achievable. Sino!
That intro.
Welcome! How are you?
That intro is, I think, the best intro I've ever heard. What more can I even say? That's my whole story. That's my whole story.
We have to get the audience excited, right? We have to get them excited.
So, because so spot on.
Oh, man.
I even like the what do you call it? The English. I forgot the term. But the what came to her naturally. Her voice.
Yeah, but listen, I mean, I was fascinated in preparation of preparing for this conversation. We were talking about this amazing journey of yours, and I love this. This was really so important because I'm trying to also, with our community and conscious leaders, is just get comfortable in front of the camera and don't be perfect. Just start doing the thing. I mean, what can you teach us? What have you learned about this journey and growing up in front of the camera? I mean, how many
Look,
years?
It's so 9 years now.
Sorry, interrupted. Very interested in this conversation. Yes?
9 years now. Look, I still feel the pressures to be perfect and to do it right. But like every time, look, you need to not be scared to be embarrassed. Sometimes I cringe. Sometimes I feel like I see other influencers doing it so much better than I, but authenticity for me works every time. And if you obsess and try to get it so perfect, you'll never do it. So I've gotten obviously more prepared over the years. People must never think that authenticity means you're not prepared. So you need to be prepared, but you don't have to wear like your hair in a certain way that everyone's wearing it. Your makeup doesn't have to be done. I don't have makeup right now. Your makeup doesn't have to be done every time. You don't have to have the best dress every time. Like now, our dresses are cute, But a lot of other videos like this might be like this. So be prepared, but you don't overthink it. You don't have to look like everyone else. You don't have to be perfect. So I started very like naively. I'm a BSc girl. I was working as an urban and regional planner. Graduated. People actually in the beginning would ask me, you've got a whole honors degree in the built environment. Why are you selling dukes, you know? So I also didn't have all the answers at the time. Now I do. But like you're saying, it's what naturally came to me through talking about my everyday struggles in life. So it started off by me just saying, I'm so frustrated. I've never had natural hair, obviously, in my adult life. And I couldn't take care of it. And all the information that I was getting was from American YouTubers. Mm. And TikTok wasn't around at the time. Instagram was also very natural. Like Instagram has become very like... bougie, I can say. But back then, it was just chill. People just took pictures. So Instagram didn't have a lot of information. So I just started, I think I was one of the first people to start talking about like natural hair frustrations online. And I just found a group of other women yearning to love their hair, yearning to learn their hair. I couldn't wear my hair out with the, like, I wouldn't be able to wear, back then, 9 years ago, wear this outfit with my natural hair. I felt ugly because I'd never worn it my whole life. But what I've come to realize, it's not that the hair is ugly, it's just you're not familiar with it. So what you're familiar with is the straight, relaxed hair or a weave or braids. So I just felt ugly in my hair. And I said, no, man, I need to challenge this. I can't feel ugly how I'm born. We can enhance. Sure. We can enhance. We can have braids to enhance. We can have a weave to enhance. But it can't, your base, you need to be comfortable with your base. You can't wear makeup to bed. So like it got to a point where with our hair, I just felt like all of us are always covering our hair 24/7. So I started talking about those uncomfortable conversations. A lot of people didn't like it. A lot of people would call me names. Twitter, it was bad. Because obviously I've learned how to structure opinions since then. But like, I know there was this one picture that was posted. And then I was like, oh, wow, we're evolving in the weave space. That we're at a point where now we imitate like hair coming out of the scalp. But the way that I said it was taken so badly. Like you think that natural hair, people interpreted it as if I'm saying having your hair natural and learning to love it is the ultimate, like it's better. And I never want to come across like that. I'm just saying there is a benefit to learning to take care of your hair. There is a benefit of feeling beautiful wearing your natural hair. But so I've moved away from very strong, offensive. So that's authentic, but doesn't mean that it's right. So authenticity needs to be structured as well. It needs to be put, you need to put in work to show up as your best authentic self.
Oh, I absolutely love that. You know, I love the journey and listening to you and also growing the thick skin.
Yes.
I think what's really appealing to me, and I think all of us who are entrepreneurs are wanting to start a business, it is so important to recognize when you start a business, you realize you have to do everything.
Everything.
And you also have to be out there and be seen and build the personal brand. Very important. At what points in building your personal brand did you start seeing the rewards and that it's actually a catalyst for you to build this product?
So I didn't think of products at the time. At first, I became sort of the face that corporates wanted to associate with their brands because I wear my natural hair out. So Nike would send me, I don't know if I can mention the brands, but Nike would send me like gym wear with 10K, which I couldn't afford. But I already desired brands like Nike. So obviously now it's taking down my personal cash flow expenses. And then I was sharing an apartment. Then there's a brand that was paying me about 3K a month. And that allowed me to move from sharing to having my own apartment. So I was like, I never wanted a lot of money. But it started relieving me in ways like that. I moved in by myself. I was able to wear the best Nike clothes. And then at first I was just taking stuff for free. And then as time went, I learned that people actually get paid for this. So I negotiated with that company, the one that was paying me 3K. We negotiated that, okay, fine, I'll have a discount code and I'll put it online and whoever buys. So just from that discount code, I think the highest I earned was about 9,000 Rand. And this is 2017. And then I later learned that, no, actually, it can't just be commission. I'm posting and I've got reach. Therefore, that those eyes on the post is advertising. So you should actually be paying me a marketing fee, not just a conversion fee. Because marketing is eyes, conversion is sales. So pay me for two.
She's got
things.
It going.
So I negotiated with them and they started paying me as well for photo shoots. And all. I became their face and I had never been paid. And the thing is, people I've made sure that as an entrepreneur, I don't take advantage of people like that. Even if they ask for a little bit of money, I'll pay something. They had never paid me for photo shoots. I found out that they had my face on their cars or their fleet. almost had my face on their billboards, but I reached out and I said, okay, I know that I made a bad decision by doing the photo shoot without payment, but now these are the things that I'd like to get paid for in hindsight. And I know that because they took those pictures with their cameras, they own the pictures. But I guess it just appealed to ethics, you know. So she did, I think she did compensate me for that shoot, because I told her that, why are my pictures on your car? Or either remove the pictures on the car, because that's different from what she had said you'll use the images for, which was Instagram. So over time, all those lessons were teaching me for things I'm doing now, but I didn't know at the time. So I just realized, okay, cool, people are willing to give me stuff for free, therefore they can also pay me. So as time went by, I started negotiating better. I got a one-year contract from Unilever that covered my rent and car for a year. And then I was like, you know what, if I'm posting once a week and I've got 40,000 followers at the time, 2018, what if I do this every day? So then I started posting every single day, sometimes twice a day, from end of 2018. The contract came into play beginning of 2019, and I left my 9-to-5.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so everything I was paying for with my 9-to-5, one contract covered. So I could have gotten, well, the plan was to try and unlock more contracts. So I did. So yeah, so I went from 40,000 followers in 2019. 2020, I remember when I moved into my first beautiful apartment from income from this thing, and I was at 100,000 followers. And yeah, every year I've grown about 100,000, because now I've got about 400,000. Yeah, so in 2019, you know, like when you have a 9-to-5 and you're creating content, you feel very, very busy.
Yeah.
And then when I stopped the 9-to-5, I was bored to hell. Like, I was slowly, like, slipping into, like, I don't want to use the word depression lightly, because I know it's a clinical term, but slipping into, like, a sadness, because there was no routine. So I started, like, going to gym a lot. Like, gym became my only to-do thing. Because obviously, if you have, let's say, 5 pieces of content to create in the week, it's not going to take 5 days, and it's not going to take from 8 to 5. So, I mean, I started doing master classes by then. So I decided, you know what, let me create structure. So funny enough, entrepreneurs don't realize that when they leave their 9-to-5s, or they leave their structured lives, or even if they don't come from a 9-to-5, let me actually just speak about what I know. When you leave a 9-to-5 and you go into entrepreneurship, you end up having to recreate that 9-to-5 structure, because you can't just wake up and...
Very good advice.
Gain a lot of weight because there was no structure. Because at 9-to-5, you wake up, you're walking, you've got steps in between. You don't sit at the house, you don't eat as much. So just like making those little changes for mental health reasons as well. So yeah, I think one of the biggest upskilling that I've had to do is creating a structure, making sure that mentally I'm well, like I'm exercising, I'm eating well, and then the critical business aspects. I got an accountant in 2020, started learning how to file business taxes. In 2019, sorry, I registered the business in 2018, even though I had already been operating from 2018. But I was taking the income into my personal bank and filing personal tax as that was just additional income. But then as the income got higher, I had to register a business, and also for lower tax, because you pay less tax on business. So 2019, I got the accountant, started just putting things in order. And I like that I came from a 9-to-5 environment, because I really value doing things right. I find that sometimes when entrepreneurs don't come from a 9-to-5, they don't take the stuff like accountants seriously and all of those things. So yeah, 2019, sold my first product in July, which is satin pillowcases. And then I started studying marketing, a postgraduate diploma in marketing, because now I've had too much free time. And I was like, what can I do to empower myself?
What a great problem to have. Oh my word.
I've got free time and I've got the money, so let me pay for myself to upskill better. So I decided that a marketing degree or postgraduate diploma would help me understand what I'm getting into. And I had not thought about the product yet. It was just more like, I'm a marketer now. Why not learn it? And I think it's more aligned to my personality than a BSc anyway. So I did that, started in 2020 Feb, lockdown hit. Best blessing for me. Worst in a little bit, in some ways, but best, because people were at home. They couldn't access salons. They couldn't have other people care for their hair. So now I had the opportunity to teach people how to take care of their hair. So I did a 21-day series on social media, and the engagement was insane. So people were like, tell us more. What can we do for our hair? And I was like, okay, buy this pillowcase. It'll help not dry your hair overnight, because we're all chilling and sleeping all the time. People bought those things. Like, I think the previous year in 2019, I was selling like 5 a month, and I was ecstatic, because I mean, that's 2K. I can do it. So I can like fill in gaps, buy electricity or something. So I like that I was also never driven by money. I was always driven by insights and passion and solving problems. I think my biggest thing is
Here's the marketer in you. Yes.
I'm a problem solver. I always say my biggest business, my biggest job as a CEO of Love Kings is problem solving. So with the marketing degree that I was doing, we carried on online during lockdown, and I learned how to take customer insights more seriously and how to interpret them and how to apply them into my business. So I liked, my ideal setup is a satin pillowcase because I'm a tension girl. I don't wear tight clothes, even tight jeans. I don't like things holding me. So pillowcases, it's easy, you just sleep. I was solving the ease problem. And people were like, no, Sino, we can't get into this pillowcase thing. We have to take out our pillowcases. We don't know what to do. Now we have four pillows on the bed. We just want a duck. And a duck is something that black women grow up with. Mm. So there's the heritage, the touch. And I was like, no, I don't like how black women are portrayed in a duck, because it's always like feisty, cleaning around the house, shouting at your husband. I don't like the stereotype. And someone said, challenge the stereotype. You know, we grew up with our mother shouting at us in dukes on a Sunday. Challenge it. So I was like, actually, the modern woman still needs the duck to protect her hair, but she doesn't have to wear it the same way our mothers wore it. Mm. So I made a modernized satin duck that matches the pillowcase, that matches your satin beautiful pajamas.
Ooh,
so nice. I marketed it like that. I'd wear my bras and things, pajamas, and I'd put a matching color duck and take a picture in my beautiful apartment. And it gave it a more like modern, bougie vibe, premium vibe. So my products are premium. So yeah, so people ate it up, and I sold R1 million worth of dukes in a month.
2 months incredible. After launching them. Sure.
So listening to what customers want over your biases is also very important.
So important.
So that was one of the biggest upskilling or like pivots or learning curves. Yeah.
If I can just add to that, I mean, even with my own business and even the things that I'm doing with Unconscious Leaders, is like you have this idea of where you want to take it, and then you go, oh, this is the road, this is where we're going, this is where we're heading.
And then
all of a sudden, you know, when you start listening to your community, they go, no, this is what we want to do.
Yes.
And it's so important to heed to that, because that's a signal.
Yes.
And
yes.
In that moment of intent is where you really need to act. And I always believe that is where that's what the difference between a good entrepreneur and a bad entrepreneur.
Same. You can't do it your way,
yeah,
because you're serving people.
Yeah.
So every year ever since, I've basically launched a product. It got to a point where people had enough colors. People had enough dukes. I did bonnets, satin pillowcases, and satin ties, and dukes. I had four satin products. I did a kiddie range. I tried to like add so that there's more volume so people can keep buying. But it gets to a point where people have enough. I'm still doing the influencer stuff on the side. Obviously not, because my focus is more on the business. Because I think it drove me better mentally. Like, I'm a thinker. I'm a problem solver. So the influencer stuff is just pretty pictures. You know, I'm not talking down to influencing, but it's good videos and good pictures. There's not a lot of pivoting and upskilling and learning there. Once you get it right and you know the lighting, you know how to do it, you're done. Mm. So now with the business, it was challenging, and I got to grow and learn. And I think I'm a person who thrives for that. Maybe one day when I have kids, I'll slow down. But for now, I'm still a hungry girl, you know. So I started focusing more on the business. And obviously what you pour into the most will reward you the most. If you do it the right way. So I got in touch with a business advisor. He worked at JP Morgan, and he grew businesses for a living at JP Morgan. And then he basically said, in a business, you have to have products that finish, or products that people come back for. So it's about returning customers, which I think he was telling me also aligned to what the marketing course was saying and what I was also seeing. So I like that the things that I was doing were all aligning. So he said, you have to create a product that finishes. At the time, I hadn't had the product in mind yet. This is 2021. And I was applying for funding, and I was doing all of this. I met with the founders of Superbalist through him, and they were saying to me, basically, your product is not a need. Your product is a luxury. So how do you sell a luxury? Things like that I hadn't thought of.
I want to interrupt there and just ask, how did you know to go to a business advisor? Like, this is interesting to
me. Someone told me, okay, who is in business, and he said, look, because you're learning and you come from a different environment, sometimes you reach your ceiling in problem solving. So you need people to guide you and give you guide you and give you advice. You need different perspectives. Mm. And what I like about myself, whenever someone gives me a different perspective, I can build on it.
Yeah.
I just need to spark thinking, and then I can build on it.
Yeah.
So
excellent.
But I say to him, I'm not just going to launch for the sake of launching. I need to have something needs to come to me through the research that I've done and through the experience that I've had with my natural hair. And he said he respects that. Or he said, alternatively, lower, because my quality is very good. My pillowcases can last you 10 years, 20 years, if you just wash them correctly. So he was like, your stuff is such high quality that people don't need to top up. But if it's low, he's like, people, you think other companies make low quality products by mistake? No. They want them to wear out so that you can come back for more. And I was like, I'm not willing to compromise quality because it's a premium product. I'd rather than just know that my sales for those items will eventually just go down, and then we'll do products that finish monthly. So that's what I did. I was just waiting for the idea. And then through reading all my customer comments, the same way that happened with the Duke, reading what they want, the hairline issue started coming up a lot because we braid a lot and do weaves a lot. So you find that a lot of black women don't have hairlines. And there's even stats like, over 50% of black women over the age of 40 don't have hairlines because we start braiding from sometimes the age of 6. Actually, mothers braid their kids' hair like they do plaits from the age of 1. So imagine the tension of pulling your hair from 1 years old to 40. So we bold, but we also have a gene as black women that makes us more susceptible to it. There's like a whole paper on it. But so the hairline thing, I started dreaming about it, like thinking about it all the time. Then I was like, my product has to be a hairline solution. And at that time, when I Googled it, there was nothing in the market. Now there's 1,000 things. But I was first to market. Obviously, I can't say Beyonce didn't have the idea before me, because she released hers, I think, 6 months or a year after mine. But obviously, she didn't, you know. But it's just that, luckily, through some divine intervention, I was first to market. So I was the one talking about hairline serum, repairing your hairline. So people also liked that they were hearing about something different that solves this
amazing
issue. So in 2022, I launched the hairline serum, August. This is a year after I had been told that I need to find a product that finishes. So it finishes monthly, and it's a need that's forever because we continue to braid. So we need to maintain the hairline. And it also really erodes your self-esteem not to have a hairline. Mm. So what happens is that some people's hairline goes, and then they become dependent on the hairstyles. Even though before they were already dependent on them, now it's a real dependent. So the hairline serum has been our bestseller. We do have a product that's now competing with it, which is the hydration spray. I use aloe vera. Just our hair is very dry because of the kink pattern.
Yeah.
So the sebum from the scalp struggles to travel all the way up to the hair. So you'll find that the ends are the most dry. So that's another thing that I think that was more of a personal one that I had realized. But also when I looked at people's hair, it was always gray and dry. And I knew that hydration, no amount of moisturizing helps that. You need it's like when you're thirsty, that water. You can't drink Coca-Cola or whatever over and over. You need that to quench that thirst. So those are the best-selling products, and all of them are based on customer needs and my personal experience and customer experiences with their hair. But what I liked also that when I released the hairline serum, I was advised that rather having a regimen, because you know that in lockdown, skincare regimens became big, retinol twice a night, don't mix this, the ordinary became big at that time. So I also wanted to introduce along something that people relate to in the skincare. So I made it like a 4-step routine. I used active ingredients, which were quite popular at the time, turmeric, capillia longa, hyaluronic acid in my spray and everything. So yeah, now we're here.
Incredible. I mean, like, I'm listening to your journey and I'm going, oh my word, you are just like a firecracker. Now, listen, I wanna take it back now that we've embraced your story, hanging on every word that you're saying. I want to understand, by building a business, scaling a business is very difficult. It takes a lot of hard work. What lessons did you learn about scaling that you can impart?
Look, I learned that the case studies that I was looking at were very UK, US based. And I think those settings, governments, I don't know how to put it, even the private sector in those countries are very pro entrepreneurship, and funding is available. If you can prove a case, if you can show people that you sold a million rand worth of dukes in a month, people will give you money. South Africa, that doesn't happen. South Africa, the companies that are giving money out to help, because you can't scale without money. And I find that the one time I asked this lady that I saw that as a possible mentor, telling her that I need money for scaling, she says this typical thing that a lot of people say, which I find that is naive. They said, you know, sometimes you think you need money. A lot of people think they always need capital. Look at all the other things that maybe you're not doing right in your business. And I'm just like, scaling is multiplying, is compound, is taking one thing, making 10,000 of that same thing and distributing.
Mm.
So how are you going to do that without money? Because the concept in marketing, everything is good.
Because it sounds to me like you already perfected your product.
Yes, I'd already perfected my problem. My market was there. The demand was there. I could prove that people were coming onto the site and not being able to get what they want.
Mm.
I was sold out more than I had stock. So if my annual financial statements were saying, let's say hypothetically, I'm making 10 million rand a month, but I'm only in stock for 4 months out of 12. There's potential there. So I feel like a UK-based private equity company can see that gap. But here they'll say, why was your profit so low? Because I'm using my profit as capital. Or why is your EBITDA not this? An EBITDA of 1.5 million is not possible when you're growing a business and you have high operational expenses. So it's just that, like, I haven't been, well, now finally I've found a solution, but for 4 years, that was my biggest challenge. I couldn't find someone to fund me, to help me scale. So I used personal money, all the money I earned from influencing, I used to fund the business. So that was my capital. So that's what I did.
So that's slowly, a lot of risk slowly. Taking as well.
A lot. But look, for me, didn't feel, people say it's risk and I get it how it looks like risk,
yeah.
But I could see the numbers.
Yeah.
For me, it was the only way. Like,
and the conviction.
Yes. For me, it was just like, if I put in 100 Rand, it becomes, let's say, 600 Rand.
Mm.
It's a no-brainer. For me, that's not a risk. I was so certain by seeing my stats that people are going to buy the product. Like, there's times when, there was one time I released products, they sold out in 7 minutes. We sold 200,000 Rand worth of
like
stock
the
in
Kylie
7 minutes.
Jenner. You're like literally the Kylie Jenner of hair products, right? I mean, hello.
So I think when you have those stats, it feels like less of a risk. And I knew that I'd always get my money back. Well, I never got it back. I still haven't gotten it back. I'm going to get it back soon. But, like, it just kept on, like, going back in. But, like, I'd see the what it grows into. Take all of that money. So if my first stock was 200 units, the next stock will be 250 units. The next stock might be 260 units. But when the money comes back, it can do a little bit more than last time. But the thing is, the demand was growing just as faster. So people started getting angry, throwing all the words at me, like, you're selling nothing because it's always sold out. So I want to get to a point where people don't feel like, I think people even say, someone says, you know, someone sent me a DM, I'm not sure if you stock up a lot or you just stock up a little and you're creating a scarcity thing. And I started posting pictures. When the stock would come, I'd say, this is how much stock I have. 2,000 of these things, 2,000 serums. So when they sell out, don't tell me that, like, I'm creating a facade. You know, even now with Clicks, the stock that we sent out, the first PO, is as much stock as we sold last year in 6 months.
Sure.
And it's already selling out. So people, I just want people to be clear that I'm not under-supplying. The demand
there's
is just,
a huge demand. Exactly.
So I just haven't been able to find funding, which is terrible. So even this first PO with Clicks, I did myself. But I'm doing a 12-month program now, which is funny because my first business, well, the only business advice I ever had was from where I had worked at JP Morgan. And now I've joined a 12-month program with JP Morgan. And there's no tie. It's just coincidence. So they're helping me scale by teaching me pricing, costing.
It's incredible.
Basically just making sure that you're scaling the right way. So now they are my mentors. I've got a mentor actually inside Mohammed that has been provided by JP Morgan. I've got an accountant. I've got my own accountant, but I've also got an accountant provided by JP Morgan to make sure that my accountants are doing the right thing. The CFO also speaks to us about our needs, and funding is almost guaranteed. So we apply for funding using skill. They teach us how to apply for funding and where the right channels are. So if I need an EBITDA of 1.5 million, they'll get me there. They'll teach me how to manage cash flow and do all of those things. It's not possible in every scenario, but what's nice about them, if there's something that they need to do for you to unlock, let's say I need funding to unlock Clicks, to unlock the EBITDA, to get more funding, they'll help you.
Mm.
So luckily I've been able to find that, but without that, Clicks wouldn't have worked out. So the funding thing is quite, no matter how good the business case is, it's hard to find. So I think having family that has money, like grandparents, parents, a lot of friends of mine that I know that have been able to scale their businesses, the first 2 million comes from family or cousins. I remember the one company that we invested in, in 2021, he wrote where the money came from. 500,000 came from one of his cousins, another 500,000 came from a cousin, and then the 1 million came, the parents withdrew it from their retirement fund.
Yeah.
So, funding.
And pre-ordering? And
you I know, did pre-ordering. Yeah. So at first I didn't want to do pre-ordering because it would create a mess, but I created a system, so I've been really good. 2021, I started building systems for my business, and I can, my business can operate in my sleep. That, like, I've gotten really brilliant at systems. So I started doing pre-orders using systems that make it not a mess. And that works, but there's a production timeline, right? So I import some of my key active ingredients. And to get my Kapilonga and Bicapil into South Africa takes 7 weeks. So if I can't do a pre-order for 8 weeks. Production takes a week, like just when the ingredient comes.
Yeah.
And production takes a week, and then packaging takes a week. So that's like 8 weeks. So, yeah, so it's a 6 to 8 week production. So I can't do pre-orders for 8 weeks. So I have to always have cash flow. So I'd also say that's a thing to think about if you're creating products. But anyway, it's a, sometimes you always have to, you always have to weigh up. So get the brilliant ingredient that grows the hair from overseas, but it takes seven weeks. Or get another ingredient that's less potent or less active or less, not as strong, that takes 2 weeks, but now your production cycle is quicker. So your scaling will be quicker. But I chose quality and impact, like strong products, over, I didn't know at the time. But going forward, I think because I already have those strong ingredients in those products, when I do my shampoo and conditioner, I'll use more readily available products for the scaling purposes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really loving, so one thing in our community, we're very passionate about building Africa and, you know, supporting local. And what I think I'm starting to recognize a lot is there's so many challenges in getting quality in order for the base for your for your products or services that you want to actually bring to the table. What advancement would you like to see in the future in order for Africa to be catalysts?
Look, it's I get 90% of my stuff locally. My production is local, which is the biggest thing, that the most expensive thing. But there's no manufacturing, not no, but there's very limited manufacturing for plastic in South Africa. I don't have the insights as to why, but I think the plastic industry can get better by making more, like, more options. So for the look and feel that I needed, I had to go to China. China is the capital of the world when it comes to all these things. China has millions of options. I'm not joking, millions of options for plastic bottles. Like these, I can't find anywhere here. This is high quality PET bottles that also, by my differentiator is also packaging, because it's a premium brand. So if my products are going to look like any other, if you go to the biggest plastic companies in South Africa, the bottles are the same. So if I want to differentiate myself in the market, I need a different bottle. So unfortunately, that I'd love to see more options locally. Active ingredients, they're patented. So if a person, you create the patented formula in Russia, unfortunately, like, that's the strong ingredient that I need to make my product more more effective. So I can't compromise on that. So the plastic bottles and some of the active ingredients are the only things that I import. The rest are local. I just feel like with the active ingredients, there's nothing that we can do. I can't force people to create products and patent them. Look, innovation would be great, more innovation. But plastic bottles, that can happen. But other than that, everything else is local. So I'd like funding to get better locally, maybe plastic options, production, variety. Yeah, those are the only two things that I can really
Well, it's
say.
Two very big things.
Yes, I was about I to mean, say, those very, are huge
two things. Two very, very
I've
big
things.
I've lost
years of sleep.
and she's so old. I mean, like, hello. She calls herself, what did you say?
A middle-aged.
Middle-aged. How old are
Business
you?
Business has aged me.
Uh-huh, I'm 34. Listen, don't put people off.
But I'm 45. No, look, I don't want to put people off, but business is the hardest thing that you'll ever do.
But it teaches you the most important skills. And honestly, from a futurist perspective, I do believe that we are going to see massive surges in the gig economy. We're going
Definitely.
To see massive people.
But
are
don't
going to become,
go in thinking it's sweet and easy.
Yeah.
Even my employees, when they come work for me, they're like, "Sino, on social media, you make it look like a breeze." I said, "Why would it be a breeze? Why would I don't understand how it could be a breeze.
But that's the thing, right?
Yeah.
People always look at your success, but they don't realize the hard work that you had to do before that.
I posted a picture showing that I did my first Love Kings masterclass with Love Kings t-shirts 8 years ago. People couldn't believe it. They said, eight? I said, I can't even believe it's been eight.
Oh, my word.
And, like, yeah, so it's not overnight. So, yeah, people just, I think it's hard to understand how hard it is until you do it.
Yeah.
But it's hard. But my advice would be get your taxes right in year one. Because if you don't get your taxes right and you have all the other scaling and all of those other issues, there's no way out of it. You'll sink.
Very good advice is always to have a lawyer.
Yes, my lawyer's amazing.
You have to have a brilliant lawyer and a brilliant accountant. When you have those two right, you know, you can sleep at night a little bit better.
Yes, my lawyer did a lot for me. She trademarked all my stuff in 2020. And she, I like her because she's experienced, right? So she tells me what's going to happen in 10 years that I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
So she says, see, you know, in 10 years, this is going to happen. These are the scenarios I've had. Protect yourself here. She even told me to trademark in other countries as well. Because once the product gets big, those countries will, like especially China, they'll spot that this thing is doing well. It happened with one of the LVMH winners where when they won, China already started making their products. So what they should have done is trademarked in China first. And it's not expensive here. I think a trademark in China might be 5,000 Rand. But it's just the insight into doing it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she advised it. So my lawyer's brilliant. Lita, love her. She works at Adams & Adams. I've been with her for 5 years. My accountants, unfortunately, you will outgrow accountants. Because the first accountants were handling Love Kings at that scale. As you scale up, you need people with more capacity. Like now I've got a team with my accountants. There's like 10 people. One does my personal tax, one does my monthly management accounts, two do my AFSs, there's lots of different things. So there's always someone reaching out to me about something. And at the previous business company, one person was doing it. It's impossible. Mm. They're going to miss stuff, they're going to make mistakes. But obviously the bigger the numbers and the things get, like now there's a software that I need to start using called Sim7. The software a month is 10K. Onboarding is 125,000 Rand.
Sure.
But it's for production management, because I can't be supplying clicks with no manufacturing management. So it's an inventory management system. I think it's created in India, and it helps you, makes everything smooth. All the big businesses that are doing well, that are in manufacturing, are using Sim7. So it's just, every month is a new thing. But I said to them, I can't afford it right now. Let's do it in January.
So they were listen, like, there's a lot of people demanding your product, so you better get going. But listen, the wisdom that you have imparted to us is absolutely phenomenal. I want to close off with one single question. Where do you see the future of influencing going?
I think it's going to become more authentic. I think people are over the creating perfection. I think people are yearning to see the real struggles. People are yearning. Look, they want it, but they're not into it yet. So it's like, I don't know how to explain it. When you want something, but you're not aware that you need it. So I think when they see it, they engage with it. But when they see the perfect makeup, pretty pictures, designer bag, they like that more, like actively like it. But TikTok, for example, is more authentic and it's more no makeup, showing up, chilling with your dog. And that has much bigger engagement than Instagram. I think that's where we're going. We're going to chilling at home on a Saturday, having your glass of wine, no makeup, wearing your Love Kings dog. And that's what I think, that's where it's going. And I think brands are going to pay for that. Because brands can do the perfect stuff. They hire models, they do ads. But brands can't do the authentic stuff.
Yeah.
So I think that's our power, is to show how we live with brands in our homes authentically. That's what I've done. And yeah. I think that's what's going to be more lucrative.
Phenomenal. I really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you so much for bringing so much energy. I absolutely loved it. You were phenomenal.
Thank you.
Well, I hope that this episode has taught you everything that you need to know and how to build your business for profit and to just be persistent and just keep going. Never give up. And it does pay off. All right. Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for having me.